Baton, who's from DFID. He's a social development advisor at DFID. He's an anthropologist.
Yay!
In gender, we always celebrate the anthropologists. And he's worked for Oxfam and Christian Aid in Southeast Asia and Africa. So thank you all very much for being to come and join us. I'm going to give you the word. The purpose of this panel is to share with you some background, some knowledge, some insights on how these three different agencies have integrated gender into their programming and some of the challenges they face. And so I'm going to just simply turn the word over to you, Jean Rebecca.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Okay, great. Thanks so much, Jackie. And one of the words from the last conversation that I thought was key in terms of what I want to say about USAID is convergence. I think Kathy might have mentioned that, or Rajita. I think at USAID, one of the things that I've seen, I want to talk about three different things. I want to talk about, and several of these have already been mentioned today, the idea of accountability and, holding people accountable, holding systems accountable, the importance of gender expertise and investing in people and funding. So those are the three things I just want to touch on really briefly. I think I have 4 minutes and 38 seconds or something like that. So anyway, I'll try not to talk too fast, right? In terms of accountability, I did a fellowship with, I'm new to USAID, but did a fellowship with them in the early 2000s. And one of the things that I really was loud and clear then was the fact that USAID was asking people to do gender integration. We had all this stuff on the books, this is what you're going to do, but nobody really knew who was accountable for it. There weren't any accountability structures put in place, and people were basically, if someone said, yeah, I'm kind of interested in gender, you're the point of contact, or you're the gender advisor for this unit or this mission. And basically, if you kind of even expressed any interest, you became the expert. And what has happened now with the new gender policy that USAID developed 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, the new gender equality and female empowerment policy, is it's really laid out who is accountable for what within which structures. It's set up within the Washington bureaus, who's responsible for which for doing gender at gender integration at the mission level, who's responsible for it. So it's really begun to kind of lay out and map a little bit more of that. Those accountability structures so that actually people know what they're being held accountable for. So it's also said to missions, you are required now by, I believe it's by March 2014, to actually have a gender advisor on staff in a mission or in a bureau. That's new. We've never had that kind of requirement before. So that's kind of a new, that's new. And when I talk about funding, I'll say who funds that. In terms of investment in people and sort of that whole gender expertise, we were talking at lunch that, sort of there has been, I think, in the past, this expectation that if you had gender attached to your, if you were gender point of contact, somehow you were an expert, or that anybody can do gender. It's easy. You just pay attention to, you just sort of disaggregate by sex, and there you go. You've done it. And we know that that's not the case, and that it does take a specific, it takes a set of skills. So one of the things that USAID has done is they've now, every staff member, every professional staff member is now required to take a gender training. We know that gender training, one-off gender training isn't necessarily the answer to something, but at least that's a start to getting all professional staff sort of in, maybe in the same page. And so USAID is trying to look at ways that it can begin to sort of build that expertise. One of the things is actually having somebody on staff that is a trained gender advisor. That's one of the ways they do that. And another thing, we're doing a series of gender, what we're calling GLEES, Gender Global Learning and Evidence Exchange, and actually CG folks were involved in that. The first one we did, which was in late May in D.C., and we'll be doing a series more of those, so stay tuned. You'll be hearing about those as they're coming up. But that's another way that USAID is sort of saying this is our commitment. The last thing that I think in terms of, for us, a convergence of things that have really led to, I think, a stronger gender integration kind of writ large, the agency as a whole, is funding. USAID as a whole of the century has sort of put more focus on gender, on funding gender. It's created two senior level positions for gender, one in the administrator's office and one in the policy planning and learning division. All of the bureaus now have gender advisors. The Bureau for Food Security has three gender advisors, and the missions will be expected to have gender advisors. So the agency as a whole is putting more money towards that. They've also said to the missions, you're going to fund the gender advisor position. We're not funding that for you. You have to figure out a way to fund that position. It's required by May, next March, you have to have that position on the books and have somebody in that position. And they've even laid out some specific skills and that sort of thing for that person. But they've sort of said, you're going to have to fund it. So the funding is coming from various sources, but they are basically saying, no, we believe in this and we think this is important, so we're putting money towards it. I think I've taken up my 4.5 minutes.
Thank you very much. Thanks for a very helpful set of ideas, and I hope you'll see some resonance in some of the things that you're commenting on and some of the conversations that have gone before. Lynn, would you like to come in and tell us about your experience specifically with the back to elsewhere?
Actually, yes, I'm definitely saying that because I'm not quite dead yet in the CGI world, which is where I started back in the mid-90s, co-managing research on gender, trying to get it off the ground. I then moved to the World Bank where I was for many years and had much the same experience. At the time when I moved across, gender wasn't mainstreamed. So in agriculture, it was pretty opportunistic. We had good ideas and we had ones that were less successful. And I think it was about sort of taking opportunities when you could see them. So at one particular time, we introduced communities of practice and we had one on gender and rural development. But then what happened was the Agriculture Sector Board, which controlled agriculture across the bank, decided that one member of the sector board would be responsible for two of these community of practices so they could keep an eye on them and keep an eye on the budget. So we decided that we knew who we wanted because he was somebody who knew nothing about gender but was somebody who would actually take the job seriously, which meant we could then influence. So he came to a few of our seminars and actually got on board with the message. And he was the sector manager of a region in the bank. And he went back to his region and he said, in future, all projects that come to me, if you do not discuss gender, they will come back to you. You will not get them to the board until you've done that. So I think you need that in your organization. You need some people who are jockeying, lobbying, and trying to make things happen. And then I think the other thing you also need, and I'm going to use a very negative example for this, we were senior management team planning for what many of you might know is the sector week, the rural sector week, which brings everybody to sort of headquarters for this week. And that particular year, we wanted to reach out to the rest of the bank. So not just agriculture, we wanted to reach out to everybody else. So they're planning the first session, and when they finished planning the first session, I looked at it, and basically this opening keynote panel has four white males, who are all 55 plus. And I looked at it and I was like, okay, how to politely point out that this might not quite work? And so I sort of was saying, well, you know, research shows that people tend to listen to and react to people who sort of look and sound like them. And the average age in the bank is much younger in other sectors than it is in agriculture. And actually, it's much more diverse. There's many more women in all the sectors. So we might want to, and it's then director, and this, you know, this is all early management at the bank. It's not associated with anyone who's around now. Turned around and said, but yeah, but are there any good women in Africans? And we sort of sat there, and I was like, well, you know, wasn't there a sector manager at the bank who's now the Minister of Finance in Nigeria? She might qualify, I think. So it's, you know what, from that I want to talk about networks of people. And what we also had in the bank at that time was a gender and diversity network in terms of human resources, in terms of recruiting women, in terms of getting women in senior management positions. And that's about men and women communicate differently, we see different things, we have different networks of people. Those of you who sat, I was saying to Mark at lunch, our table had largely women and two men, because there was a little group of women, so women kept coming and sitting down. Many other tables were almost exclusively men, because women don't want to walk up to a table that's largely sort of men, any more than men want to walk up to a table that's largely women and join it. So it's important that you get women into senior management positions, because they see the world a little differently and they communicate differently. So we had those ingredients. Then what happened? Well, a Danish minister passed a torch to Bob Day on MDG 3 and female empowerment. He grabbed that torch, he came back, and then things really changed. So we had the ingredients, but now we have the enabling environment. So he set really the bank, specific indicators, 100 million to be going out through commercial banks, through IFC, to women. A private sector leaders forum, targeting in terms of IDA investments, that gender analysis would underpin 100% of IDA investments within 3 years. And I think the issue is what, you know, when you do that, what you measure, if you start measuring something, then things start to change, because then people want data. So then you start sex disaggregating all your data. And the research department at the bank starts doing the research to prove the evidence. And it's not just about collecting sex disaggregated data, I mean, I hope the CGR admitted that. It's about collecting at the level that you can do it at a power analysis statistically. You need enough women to be able to do this statistically. So that started happening in the bank. You start putting the evidence out. And so it comes all the way through. Once the president says something, it's a gender action plan. It's the budget. It's the demand for technical things in agriculture. We've been pushing. You need to do this. You need to do that. But getting demand was difficult. Once this comes down from on high, then it starts being, oh, can you tell us how we do gender in water management? How do we do gender in forestry? How do we integrate gender into our livestock or into our value chain or into this? So it gave the opportunity to produce lots of toolkits and things that would go out and help people. So to me, you know, to mainstream, it's both, you need the skills. If you put it in from on high before you have some skills in the agency, it's going to be very slow to do because it's all new people. If you've already got the skills, you create the space for them. But I don't think we're there yet, because, you know, we're mainstreamed when you don't have to talk about gender. You don't have to stipulate you will have indicators. And that's, you know, what I was saying this morning in that early discussion. Great statistics came through in the four presentations, but it's millions of farmers and millions of households, not millions of women and millions of men. Gender got lost in that final bit. When you move to that, you automatically talk about men and women and differential impacts in reports, then you make sense.
Thank you very much, Lynn, for giving us a very useful insight of the whole institutional architecture that we've seen developed in the bank. There's some good lessons there. Andrew, how would you like to give us some views?
Yeah, with this, I mean, I think there's been some major changes in recent years in terms of integration gender, certainly in all of the funding. And I think there have been three main factors behind that, which I'm going to go through relevant to the CGIL. First is leadership. Second is accountability mechanisms. And third is by investing in expertise and capacity. In terms of leadership, I mean, DFID is a government department, it's a hierarchical organisation, and I think having ministerial and senior civil servant support for gender has been critical. And it's very evident at the moment with the current international development sector, he has become a real champion of gender and is really pushing DFID as a whole to move forward on gender. And I think, you know, our ministers push other people to follow what we're in DFID. But I think it'd be worth reflecting on what's helped generate this support from leadership. And I think what's been really interesting is that the shift from maybe gender mainstream into having what they call a strategic vision on women and girls. Mm-hmm. And what we've got is four main pillars, women's economic empowerment, girls' education, the then first pregnancy and support and safe childbirth, and preventive violence against women and girls. For each of these pillars, there's specific concrete targets that this is trying to reach, and that we're holding ourselves account for. And I think that's really helped mobilise people within the organisation get buy-in, people sort of, it's more tangible. I mean, it's built on the foundation that the early work on gender mainstreaming is done, and it's, you know, gender analysis is critical to achieving these strategic goals. But I think it's sort of shifting the mindset of the organisation. Let's, what's going to be for all this work on gender, and having targets that we can measure. So I think that's been really important in generating the interest and buy-in of leadership within different, right up to ministerial level. The second one is about accountability mechanisms, which both Jeannie and Lynn mentioned. And I think that's really critical because, you know, you can have strong leadership, but unless you've got mechanisms within institutions to hold programs and people to account, then likely as people, you know, they think and get ignored or just forgotten about. And so what we've seen now, we have a business case we have to develop for all these funding programs. It has to have a gender analysis as part of that. We probably need to do more on things like annual reviews and impact surveys, but really to get consistency across a broad, complex institution, you've got to have some very clear ways of scrutinising projects, both at the design stage, the monitoring stage, and the evaluation stage, and that's been critical. I think the other thing is about accountability of individuals. We've tried various mechanisms within DFID to hold individuals to account, particularly senior managers, to ensure that the programs they're responsible for delivering on have a very strong gender component to it. And it comes out in annual performance reviews, individuals, and various, you know, ways to try and hold individuals to account for their performance on gender. I think that's been really important as well. It really helps sharpen people's mind when they know they're going to be accepted or not. And I think the third area is, well, you can have strong leadership, you can have accountability mechanisms, but unless you've got the resources to deliver it, then you're not going to go very far. So there's been a big investment in I suppose, my own fibre, the social development fibre. There's now 80 of us now. One of our core competencies is gender. So every country office will have at least one social development advisor, research teams, one, I'm with the agricultural research team. So there's been a really big push to increase the level of expertise within this. And what I think is important, I think there's a danger that sometimes gender can be seen as the responsibility of the social development advisor, but I think that's changing. But what I think is really important, it allows us to form multidisciplinary teams when it comes to program design, program reviews, that you actually get a collection of livelihoods, economists, social development people together. Just having a strong base actually has enabled us to do it. And I think also investing in research on gender and lesson learning on gender has also been an important part of it. So for me, I think, you know, these two things, leadership, accountability, and investment in resources are really critical. How it pans out in different organisations, what you do, depend on the organisation's role, but I think those two are absolutely critical from our experience.
Thank you very much, Andrew, and all three members of the panel. I hope that these conversations and the panel have made a good foundation for you all now to go into the discussion group, where you'll be talking about your experience with integrating gender into programming, and we'll be asking you to give your reflections and thoughts about what you think the CG could do. I'm going to let Peter handle the logistics process, but I wanted to just catch for your attention before we do that. A couple of the important points here. One is having a strategic vision. I hope we've given you insight that